Not that you can't hear me or anything, but we do record the lessons. Glad to see all of you here, and thank you for accommodating me as I put the podium here today instead of back there. I knew we were going to be a little thin today, so I like being able to be down here where I can keep my eye on you. No, I'm just kidding. I joke about that, but you know, the same thing is true, that you can keep your eye on me a little bit better, and you probably have a little better aim if you're ready to throw something at me. But hopefully I won't provoke you today. We're going to begin this morning in Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8 and verse 28. Listen carefully to the words of the Apostle Paul, Romans 8 and verse 28. And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. For those whom He foreknew, He also predestined to become conformed to the image of His Son, so that we would be the firstborn among many brethren. At the end of verse 28, he says that God calls according to His purpose. He sends out a call through the gospel that those who would accept His purpose for their lives would respond to that gospel call. And the purpose he describes in verse 29, he says, when he says He predestined, this was His predetermined plan of who His people should be, that we would be conformed to the image of His Son, so that He would be the firstborn among many brethren. And so, one thing that we always need to keep in mind, and we might do a lesson on this sometime soon, is that God's purpose for our lives is that we reflect Jesus in the way that we act, in the way that we think, in the way that we speak. We are to be conformed to the image of the Son of God. And so, as we study the Bible, and especially the Gospels, we need to be very attentive to how Jesus lived, to how He interacted with people, how He dealt with different situations. And so that's one thing that I want to focus on this morning in talking about Jesus and His family, His earthly family, His mother and father and brothers and sisters. I want us to consider what we can learn from Jesus' interaction with His earthly family. And our study begins in Luke chapter 2 and verse 39. We go back to when Jesus was only 12 years old. We don't know much about His youth, but here's one episode in His youth that we have a good description of. Begin reading with me in Luke 2 and verse 39. When they had performed everything according to the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee, to their own city of Nazareth. The child, that's Jesus, continued to grow and become strong, increasing in wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover, and when he became 12, they went up there according to the custom of the feast. And as they were returning, after spending the full number of days, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but his parents were unaware of it, but supposed him to be in the caravan and went a day's journey, and they began looking for him among their relatives and acquaintances. When they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem looking for him. Then, after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. When they saw him, when his parents saw him, they were astonished, and his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us this way? Behold, your father and I have been anxiously looking for you." And he said to them, "Why is it that you were looking for me? Did you not know that I had to be in my father's house?" But they did not understand the statement which he had made to them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth, and he continued in subjection to them. And his mother treasured all these things in her heart. Wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. One thing that we can learn about Jesus and his interaction and what it means to be conformed to the image of his Son is that Jesus respected and obeyed his parents. You've heard this mentioned to me before, and it probably because once I recognized in Romans chapter 1 something that is said there, it has stuck with me and maybe scared me a little bit. In Romans chapter 1, Paul is writing about how men began to sin from the beginning of time. And he lists several sins that people are involved in. And among those is greed, murder, adultery, things like that. And right in the middle of those things, he says, disobedient to parents. And sometimes we just throw that to the side and yeah, kid, let kids be kids. I'm just young, whatever we think. We don't think of disobedience to parents as a big deal. But Paul says it's right up there with all of the other rebellion against God. And so children need to understand that. You need to understand what your relationship should be towards your parents and what God expects of you in your relationship towards your parents. And parents need to understand that. We have a responsibility to demand that respect and demand that obedience. I'm not talking about acting as lords or dictators over our children, but accepting the responsibility God has given us towards our children to train them and teach them how to be good people and respectful, productive people. One thing we notice in this episode about Jesus, looking at verses 46 and 47, he was in the temple, he was asking questions, he was answering, he was talking about the Word of God. And in verse 49, his answer to his mother, did you not know that this is where I would be? One thing we can learn about Jesus from his youth is that even at his youth and throughout his life, he had a zeal for God and to be in God's house, to worship God and to study the Word of God. It's this zeal for God in John 2 and verse 17 that Jesus, at the beginning of his ministry, goes into the temple and he sees these people selling animals and doing all kinds of trading in the temple. And he looks around and it provokes anger in his heart because they're not respecting God's house. This is supposed to be a place of worship. This is supposed to be a place that honors and glorifies God, not where they fill their wallets. And especially not in the way that they were doing it, because the passage says they were doing it, Jesus called it, you're making it a den of thieves. They weren't being honest in their business practices. So it was sin on top of sin. And Jesus was justifiably angry about this. Psalm 69 in verse 9 says, zeal for your house will consume me. And that's quoted in John 2 and verse 17 of Jesus in this episode. He had a zeal for God. He had a zeal for God's house. And it's evident here when he's 12 years old, he had a zeal for God. And a zeal to worship and serve God. What about you? What about you young people that are here? Do you have a zeal for God? Do you have a zeal to know God? Do you have a zeal to listen to God and His Word? Do you have a zeal to pray to God? Jesus had that. And if we want to be conformed to Jesus' image, we'll have a zeal for God and His Word. But in verses 43 and 44, one thing I want to point out is sometimes when we're reading narratives, these histories in the Bible, we don't always understand things or not being involved in a situation. It's just anybody tells you about a situation they are involved in. If you weren't actually there, you may misconstrue some things. And we may get from this situation, Jesus was just, you might think he was being rebellious. He wasn't being where his parents told him to be. And so he wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing. And that's why he ended up getting lost. But notice what it says at the end of verse 43, when they were returning and Jesus was stayed behind in Jerusalem, his parents were unaware of it. And in verse 44, they supposed him to be in the caravan and went on a day's journey, it seems, before they began looking for him. And I'm not trying to tell you that Joseph and Mary were bad parents. I'm just saying that it seems here it was their mistake that was going on. And it was because of their lack of attention towards Jesus that this situation came about. But look in verse 48. They finally found him in the temple, and they just didn't understand. You know, why? Where have you been? What have you been doing all this time? Why have you treated us this way? We've been looking for you. And Jesus says, why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I had to be in my Father's house? But verse 50 says, they didn't understand that. You know, the angel came to Joseph and Mary from the very beginning and told them who their son was going to be. But you know what? Even if that happened to one of us, I'm not sure that just being told of that, we can understand all the implications of what that would mean, of being parents of the Messiah, of the Son of God. And so there were some things that they just hadn't quite grasped yet. And so they didn't understand what Jesus meant when he said, did you not know that I had to be in my Father's house? Did you not know this is my purpose? My life is about serving God, about doing His will, and about setting this kind of example for other people. But I want you to notice what Jesus does in verse 51. They didn't understand it. You might imagine frustration on Jesus' part. You don't understand what I'm trying to do? But that's not the attitude that Jesus presents in verse 51. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth, and he continued in subjection to them. I want you to think about that. The Son of God in subjection to a human being. But that shows that Jesus understood what God's plan was for children. Jesus understood, even at 12, that though his purpose was greater, was bigger than his relationship to his parents, he understood that submission to them was a God-designed developing process even for him. And so in that way, he leaves an example for children today to understand we're to be in subjection to our parents, even when we think they misunderstand us. Even when we think that, well, what I'm doing is more important than what they want me to do. And surely Jesus and discussing the Scriptures and doing these things was an important thing, but he continued in subjection to them. So if we want to be like the Son of God, one thing that we will do is respect and obey our parents. And this kind of attitude, look at how it affected Jesus' life in verse 52. And Jesus kept increasing in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. The small everyday decisions affected his potential to become who God wanted him to be. And we need to understand that too. These small decisions, the daily decisions as young people for you to respond to your parents in the right way is going to affect the kind of person you're going to become and the kind of person and servant of God you're going to be in your life. That decision to do that is a decision to serve God. And all the other little decisions that we make on a daily basis affect who we are. And we need to understand that the little decisions add up to a very, very big result. Well, secondly, I want us to look at the episode in John chapter 2. John chapter 2 and verse 1. This is the occasion of Jesus' first miracle, recorded miracle. And it happens at a wedding in a city called Cana. John 2 and verse 1. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. When the wine ran out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does that have to do with us? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it." Now there were 6 stone water pots set there for the Jewish custom of purification, containing 20 or 30 gallons each. Jesus said to them, "Fill the water pots with water." So they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter." So they took it to him. When the head waiter tasted the water, which had become wine, and did not know where it came from, but the servants who had drawn the water knew, the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Every man serves the good wine first, and when the people have drunk freely, then he serves the poorer wine. But you have kept the good wine until now." this beginning of his signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. After this, he went down to Capernaum, he and his mother and his brothers and his disciples, and they stayed there for a few days. The main thing I want us to pull out of this episode is Jesus loved his mother, and it was evident that he respected his mother from what we just read in Luke chapter 2. But even his close relationship, even his love for his mother, he would not allow that to compromise his service to God. In verse 3, it seems that when Mary pointed out that the wine was gone, it seems that this was kind of a public statement to Jesus. Jesus, they have no wine. Are you going to do something about that? And sometimes I think we misread this story and thinking, you know, his mom wants him to do something, and Jesus says, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, and then in the next verse, he just gives in. But I don't really think that's what's going on here. I think in verse 3, Mary is saying, here's your opportunity to do something public. Here's your opportunity to let the people know who you are. But Jesus says, it's not time for that. It's not my time to reveal myself in that way. I don't think Jesus, in saying that, was saying, I'm not going to do anything at all. But I think what he was saying is, I'm not going to do anything public. And I think Mary's response in verse 5 to the servants about, do whatever he tells you to do, I think that's evident. She understood. He wasn't saying, I'm not going to do anything at all, and then he gives in later. He was just saying, I'm not going to do it in the way that you want me to do it. It's not time for me to do that. And so he wasn't willing. He knew that if he revealed himself at this point, and we know what happens when Jesus started to reveal himself, the people persecuted him, eventually arrested him and killed him. It's not time for that. He's got other work to do. And so he wasn't willing to compromise his purpose, his service to God, even for his mother. Only the ones in verses 9 through 12, only the ones that needed to know at that point were made aware of. He let his disciples know what he was doing. The waiters knew, and they probably understood some things about Jesus at that point. But the main thing is that his disciples knew what he did, so that they could start to understand who he was, and that they could begin to respect him for who he was. And so the question comes to us when we look at Jesus and we're trying to conform our life to his image: will we compromise our service to God for those that we love, for our family and friends? Do you compromise your attendance to worship service? Your friends, your family says maybe they're not Christians. And they say, well, we want to go on vacation, and we're going to be gone from Thursday to Tuesday. And maybe you know that where they're going to be, there's no church there. There's nobody for you to worship with. Or maybe you know that they've got things planned the whole time, that things that y'all are going to do. Are you going to go along with that, knowing that means you're not going to be able to worship God? You're not going to be able to partake of the Lord's Supper? You're not going to be able to meet with Christians on the first day of the week? Do you compromise that because you don't want to upset your family? What about maybe it's for your husband or wife? Maybe they ask you to do something. Maybe they ask you to dress in a way. Your boyfriend or your girlfriend asks you to dress in a way that you know is not pleasing to God. Are you going to compromise that because you don't want to upset that relationship? What about your purity? What about your sexual purity? Are you going to do what's wrong in that realm to compromise that for your relationship with humans over your relationship with God? You're going to compromise your integrity, your honesty? And it's hard sometimes to choose God over those people that we love. But that's what Jesus did, and that's what we must do. We'll have a little bit more to say about that in just a little bit. But I want us to look now at John chapter 7. John chapter 7. And this is an episode where Jesus is talking to his brothers. John chapter 7, beginning in verse 1. After these things, Jesus was walking in Galilee, for he was unwilling to walk in Judea because the Jews were seeking to kill him. Now the feast of the Jews, the feast of booths, was near. Therefore his brothers said to him, "Leave here and go into Judea, so that your disciples also may see your works which you are doing. For no one does anything in secret when he himself seeks to be known publicly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world." Verse 5, "For not even his brothers were believing in him." So Jesus said to him, "My time is not yet here, but your time is always opportune. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify of it that its deeds are evil. Go up to the feast yourselves. I do not go up to this feast because my time is not yet fully come." Having said these things he stayed in Galilee. But when his brothers had gone up to the feast, then he himself also went up, not publicly, but as if in secret. What we learn from this situation is that Jesus was not afraid to point out weaknesses, spiritual weaknesses in his family, and to encourage them or exhort them to be more diligent, to do what's right. Think about what he says, or what his brothers say to him in verses 3 through 5. They have this attitude, they have these assumptions about what the Messiah would do and what and if he was really the Son of God, how he would react in this situation. And they don't have a problem challenging Jesus. "Well, if you are who you say, or go up to the feast, reveal yourself. If you were who you said you were, you would do this." And so as we think about challenging others to do what we think is right, I just want to point out the fact that a lot of time those who accept a more popular view, those who are not going to get persecuted for their ideas, they don't have any problem challenging those who are actually trying to do the right thing. And so if we're trying to do the right thing, we shouldn't have any problem trying to point out weaknesses in others and trying to encourage them to do better. But if you look in verses 6 through 8, you look at Jesus' response. And I think it's very interesting. He says, "My time is not yet here, but your time is always opportune." Why is their time always opportune? He explains, "Because I'm here to make a difference. I'm here to testify of the evil of the world, to show people that they're living wrong, and that they need the change if they want to be pleasing to God. And that's why the world hates me." And notice he said, "But the world cannot hate you." What does that imply about his brothers? They were unwilling to do this. They were unwilling to tell people, "That's wrong and you need to change." And we live in a world today, we often call it a postmodern world, or just the kind of political correctness we live. We live in a world where it's not politically correct to say the way you're living is wrong. But Jesus said that. And he said, "That's why I'm pleasing to God, and that's why the world doesn't accept me, because I will tell them that they're living wrong." He said, "But you're not doing that. They won't hate you. You go to the feast. You'll be fine. You go, since we know you wouldn't have any problem, because I know the way you live, and I know that you wouldn't say anything." And so in this way, Jesus tells us that we shouldn't, as he points out their weakness, and he and by doing so helps them to understand they need to change, we shouldn't be afraid to do that with our family and with our friends. If we know that something's wrong, rather than kind of step back in the shadows so that we don't rock the boat, we need to be diligent to say, let me show you something. Let me talk to you about something. Let me help you to see what God would really want you to do in your life and how you need to change." Now, of course, we can't be helpful if we speak without love. We have to have love in the way that we talk to people, even when it's talking to them about living wrong, living in sin. Paul said if we don't have love in 1 Corinthians 13, everything we do is worthless. Even though we cannot be helpful if we speak without love, we cannot love, we do not love, if we fail to speak at all. And that's what Jesus shows me in the way that he lived. He wasn't going to waste time beating around the bush. He wanted them to know the way you're living is not right and you need to change. And if you've got family and friends that you know are not living right, you need to go to them. And with the deepest love in your heart, you need to point them in the right direction before it's too late. Jesus wouldn't wait, and we shouldn't either. Jesus prioritized spiritual service and his spiritual family over his physical family. Look in Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12 and verse 46. This will be a familiar occasion to you. Matthew 12, beginning in verse 46. While he was still speaking to the crowds, behold, his mother and brothers were standing outside, seeking to speak to him. Someone said to him, "Behold, your mother and your brothers are standing outside, seeking to speak to you." But Jesus answered the one who was telling him and said, "Who is my mother and my brothers?" And stretching out his hand toward his disciples, he said, "Behold, my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father who is in heaven, he is my brother and sister and mother." Jesus emphasized the relationship that he had with others through God over his physical relationship. Now, that doesn't diminish the importance of physical family. From Genesis to Revelation, the marriage relationship is important. From Genesis to Revelation, the relationship between parents and children is important to God. And it's connected with our relationship to God. So that doesn't diminish the importance. Even in this situation, it doesn't say Jesus didn't go out and talk to him, but he used this occasion to make a point. Here's my real family. Here's my eternal family. Here's the most important family I have. Those who follow me in doing the will of God. Look at Matthew chapter 10. He talks about this kind of thing several times throughout his ministry. Matthew 10 and verse 32. He says, "Therefore, everyone who confesses me before men, I will also confess him before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is in heaven. Do not think that I came to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I came to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's enemies will be the members of his household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who has found his life will lose it. And he who has lost his life for my sake will find it." Again, even passages like this doesn't diminish the importance of our relationship to our family. But what this helps to point out is that when I'm forced to choose, maybe my family aren't Christians, and maybe they don't understand all the decisions I have to make as a Christian. When I'm forced to choose between my physical family or service to God, or my physical family and serving my spiritual family, Jesus says, choose the spiritual family every time. Is that difficult? That's extremely difficult. But it's an important lesson we need to learn. There's two other things we can learn from this text. If the spiritual family is to be prioritized, then I should be building a strong relationship with them. You know what makes it really difficult to choose my spiritual family over my physical family? It's when I don't ever spend any time with my spiritual family. When they aren't really my family. They're just people that I see once or twice a week. They're just people that I shoot the breeze with. I talk about the weather, but I don't get into anything personal. I don't develop a relationship with them. Well, of course we're not going to want to choose them, because we don't have a relationship with them. And so in this, one thing that we can learn just by inference is that we should be building a strong relationship with our spiritual family. But also, if the spiritual family is to be prioritized, and I love my physical, then I should be working to lead my physical family to become my spiritual family. Then there's no choice that has to be made there, because we're all serving God. We're all putting God first. And we can work with our physical family in the spiritual realm. In Matthew 13, Jesus again talks about something along the same line. Matthew 13. And verse 53. When Jesus had finished these parables, he departed from there. He came to his hometown and began teaching them in their synagogue, so that they were astonished, and said, "Where did this man get this wisdom and these miraculous powers? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary, and his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas, and his sisters? Are they not all with us? Where then did this man get all these things? And they took offense at him. But Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and in his own household. And he did not do many miracles there because of their unbelief. I want you to think about, you parents in the audience, I want you to think about Jesus' family's situation here. What if your children were known in the community as someone that's kind of a rebel? Someone that maybe even is a little crazy. People are calling, saying he's got demons. People are saying all kinds of different things about him as they were saying about Jesus. And then as they're talking about Jesus, is this not the carpenter's son? Is this not Mary's son and the brother of these guys? Wouldn't you maybe take your hat and, oh, that's not mine, he's not mine. But one thing I think we can learn from this is sometimes we fail to do things that we need to do for God for fear of the effect that it's going to have on other people. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be concerned about others. We need to be concerned about how our actions are going to affect others. But Jesus, again, puts his spiritual service and his spiritual family over the physical. He wasn't worried about the reputation of his family. He wanted to show them and everybody else that I'm going to serve God no matter what you say, no matter what you do. He prioritized that over his physical family. And in Matthew 19, it's easy to see when we develop the right relationship with God and with our spiritual family, why we would want to choose this. Why we would want to choose the spiritual over the physical. Matthew 19 and verse 27. Then Peter said to him, behold, we have left everything. We have left everything and followed you. What then will there be for us? And Jesus said to them, truly I say to you, listen to Jesus. He's saying this to you and me. Truly I say to you, that you who have followed me in the regeneration when the Son of Man will sit on his glorious throne, you also shall sit upon 12 thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. That's for the apostles. Verse 29, and everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or children or farms for my name's sake will receive many times as much and will inherit eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and the last will be first. Jesus says, if you leave your family, if you leave your home, if you forsake those things for me, you will get many more than what you have forsaken. And in the end, you will get eternal life. Just in the opportunities I've had to travel in different places, in this country, in South America, and in Europe, and being able to meet Christians in different places, and automatically, the first time I meet them, have this intimate relationship through Jesus. That's powerful. To know that even if I had to reject my own physical blood family to follow Jesus, I've got a big family. I've got a family that loves me, and no matter where I'm at in the world, I've got a family that'll take care of me. More than that, I've got a home. When this life is over, I've got a father and a brother who has already proven to have loved me so much and willing to sacrifice for me. Are we conformed to the image of Jesus? Can we make these same choices? Do we deal with our families in the same way that he deals with his? Do we respect and obey our parents? Do we allow our love for our family or friends to cause us to compromise our service to God? Do we stay away from pointing out our family's spiritual needs and weaknesses because we don't want to rock the boat? Do we prioritize our spiritual service to God and our spiritual family over our physical? Do we understand why we prioritize the spiritual? Its eternal nature its divine importance. Are we building the relationship with one another that we need to be building? Are we taking the steps we need to take to become like Jesus? I hope that these things have been helpful to you and in your service and relationship with God. Jesus said, "My brother, my sisters, my mother are those who do the will of God, who obey God, who live for God. Those, that's my family," Jesus said. And if you want to be part of Jesus' family, you need to come to Him. And Paul said that we come to Him by believing in Him, believing that He's the Son of God, believing that He's the King, believing that He rose from the dead, and that we come to Him by being buried in baptism, buried in His death, and rising up to walk in newness of life as a part of His family, as His brother, having a relationship with Him. If you haven't done that this morning, I want to encourage you to come right now as we sing this song and join the family of God.